Before we get started, I want to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar, a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com, use the promo code Locked On, the name of this network, Locked On, and you can get $10 off your first order.
Well, we did the most underrated players in NBA history last week. Now, the flip side, the most overrated players in NBA history. Joined by my partner here, John Hollinger, in just a moment. I want to remind you guys, please subscribe to this if you haven't done that already. We always appreciate a rating or telling your friends about it, a share on social media as well. But let's get started here. John, we talked a lot about some of the common themes that you'll see for players being underrated. What are some of the things that make you believe a player might be overrated?
So I'd say two big things stick out historically. One, did the guy play for the Lakers, Knicks, or Celtics? Right?
Yes, yes.
Number two, points per game. You know, if the best thing in a guy's stat line was points per game, he probably was overrated.
Yeah, especially going back a little bit when that's kind of all that we had. What else?
So much of it depends on the vagaries of public perception. I do think guards, though, tend to get more of a pass from people. I mean, guards are exciting, you know? Yeah. So people get amped up about guards, even if maybe they aren't sound or that good or have some holes in their game, but still can kind of, you know, they'll have fans. Whereas bigs, you know, it's harder. Like, who is like a huge, like, Tim Duncan fan that you knew, you know, when you were growing up?
Yeah, yeah. As far as just like, oh, I just love watching this guy. Like, I really, you know, I watch every game that Tim Duncan plays. Yeah.
So big, yeah. We just don't gravitate to bigs the same way. And we don't gravitate to, for the most part, to amazing defensive players the same way. There are exceptions. I mean, obviously in Memphis, our crowd loved Tony Allen, but generally true.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Yeah, players who just play an aesthetically pleasing game. You know, I think that does skew more towards the guards, as you said.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't brought this up yet, but I'm just so excited to be a total dick for the next hour.
Yeah, but it's tough times here. You know, everyone has to be pulling together and sacrifice, and you know, it just builds up having to be so nice all the time, doesn't it?
I just need a good punching bag for the next hour.
I've got a few more things. Okay. I would actually say that players who are on teams that just weren't really that good offensively and defensively and put up like big stats. You know what I mean? I think that's something that you really have to look at very closely. Mm-hmm. Scorers who don't really create for their teammates that much, don't really drive efficient offense that much themselves. You know, yeah. That's another one. I think that this is one too that I would look at, especially in some earlier eras. Being white probably meant that you were like overrated a little bit historically, in like the 70s and 80s in particular. Now, I mean, they're definitely
Alex
like
Caruso awesome. Takes offense to your comment.
But obviously, I mean, they're like great white players, but there definitely was, I'm guessing that at a time when people were complaining that the league was too black, there might also have been a little bit of overrating of white players at that time. Just a guess.
I would say that's accurate. Yes.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I guess it's always hard to, because how someone is rated historically. I mean, I'm trying to focus more on, okay, this guy was getting MVPs. He was getting all-star nods. He was, and maybe didn't deserve them. You know, just trying to look more at like what people felt at the time. You know, it's always hard to say like where would most people have this guy ranked historically. That's kind of difficult. But like for example, when we were talking about like Shaq and Hakeem, for both those guys only won one MVP at the time, right? So that's what a few people were like, hey, those guys weren't underrated. I'm like, well, for those guys to both probably be top 10 players all time and only win one MVP each, same thing with KG. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an indication. And especially because the MVPs kind of cluster together, I think, with players who've either won it before, or you know, the reason they're winning MVP is because they're on a team that's continuing to win, and so they won because they had good players, and those good players don't just disappear the next year.
Exactly.
Okay, you want to kick us off here?
Wow. All right, I get to lead off. All right. All right.
Yeah, you were mad that I took one of your players last.
Yeah.
Week,
so all right.
I'm giving you the first attempt here.
All right. I'm going to lead off with a classic. This guy had kind of all the hallmarks of an overrated player. Played for Boston, shot the ball a lot, not very efficiently, played for a prominent college program, big points per game guy. Team was good enough to play in playoff games, but wasn't actually really good. So kind of checked all the boxes. And that is Antoine Walker, who played in 3 All-Star games and was invited to the 3-point contest at All-Star Weekend, which is my all-time favorite, despite shooting 32.5% career.
I think they're worried 32.5% for his career. I think they're just worried at that 3-point contest that he would just join it and start shooting, giving his shot selection, like whether he was invited or not. So they figured they might as well just invite him and like save everyone the embarrassment of him just like crashing it. He just wanted to shoot 3-pointers so badly.
Now, you could argue he was ahead of his time in some ways as something of a stretch four. More of a shout out to my former ESPN colleague, Kevin Arnovitz, a wretch four, a guy who shoots threes but doesn't necessarily make them. But he did spread the floor in that era more than a lot of other combo forwards did. So the thing that everyone missed was that he couldn't make twos either. He was 45% for his career on twos. In his like prime years, he was in the 42s, 42.5, 42.7, and made the All-Star team both years just because that was when the East was at its absolute pitiful worst. And, the Celtics got to the conference finals one year, with a probably the worst conference finalist team since the 1980 Kansas City Kings and, in 02. And, you know, he got a lot of quote unquote credit for that. And I think when you really go back and size it up, you kind of like, he wasn't really that good. Like he was all right. But I mean, he was out of the league by the time he was 32. I mean,
yeah. Well, and the thing about him is that in college, he was actually like a pretty athletic player and he put weight on after about 3 or 4 years and really his inside game just kind of waned and he was jacking up a lot of shots. He was like a solid passer. You know, he had some feel when he wasn't taking bad shots, but yeah, it was, that was a big, I definitely agree. I mean, I think there's more of an understanding of where he is at now, except for himself. I think he had a quote recently that he would have made $300 million in today's NBA, which, may or may not be accurate. So yeah, that's a good one to start off with. I'm going to begin with someone who is a huge scorer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I think I can add one more category of players who might be overrated too is bad conference, bad league. And so they just look better by comparison. Like what you were just talking about with Antoine Walker. Where if you just look, oh man, this guy made 7 All-Star teams.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But he was also like the 35th best player in the league every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we can start here, and that's with Adrian Dantley. Incredible scorer.
Okay.
And he's someone who early on in the analytics era, I think players were, or people were saying that he was really underrated because you look, oh man, this unbelievable efficiency. He got to the line all the time. Like his true shooting was fantastic. He's scoring 30 points a game in the 80s in Utah. And like he was so efficient. Like people just didn't really understand the efficiency back then. He didn't get enough credit for the free throws that he drew. But then you go back a little bit further, and this is one where I think actually watching him really helps a lot. Mm-hmm. Because you look at the offenses that he played on, and they're pretty middling. And you think like, oh man, this guy, you know, 30 points a game, true shooting, like, you know, I mean, I'm trying to...
Led the league in scoring twice with true shooting marks in the 60s. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you think, wow, this guy's just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
But the offenses aren't that good. And yeah, I mean, we don't have play-by-play data to show that like, oh, maybe when he was on the floor, they're much better or something. But if you actually watch the way that he played, he wasn't particularly athletic. His game, you know, he wasn't really stretching the floor at all. He had a long, slow release. He did have all these tricks where he could get to the foul line, but it was more just straight up ISO and put everyone else on the other side of the floor. And then he's not blowing by his man to where there's going to be help required. And now he can set up other players. He was not known for his passing, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he had this old man game where he would just kind of face up. He'd hold it. He had like this weird release behind his head where he could kind of get that off. But like every time he got the ball, he didn't even make his move for like 5 seconds.
Yeah. He was a one-on-one technician. Yeah. And that type of guy was definitely more prevalent in 80s basketball.
Yeah. But what you had was, if his attacks didn't work out, then he had just wasted all the time on the shot clock, and he's throwing a flaming bag to his teammates, or he's got to take a bad shot. So yes, when you get it to him, when he actually shoots it, those possessions end up being efficient, but he's not really spacing the floor when he doesn't have the ball. He's not athletic. He's a terrible defender. Dantley was like a 6'4 guy who played like, a power forward would play today, other than shooting any threes. There are a lot of guys like that in the 80s who were threes, but they just were basically like power forwards who are shorter. Like when they would go to score, they'd like post up, or they might like shoot mid-range jumpers. They didn't like dribble out on the floor and like face up to the basket and attack and handle the ball the way threes would today, or space out to the three-point line. They're considered a forward. They're just like, one forward would be on one side, one forward would be on the other side. And like, the differentiation between small and power forward hadn't fully developed yet. That didn't really happen until the late 80s. And so you might have one forward who is smaller than another, but they kind of played similarly. That was the big thing with him, is that he would just hold the ball forever. If he didn't score and he had to give it up, or he got double teamed, he wasn't a good passer or playmaker. And so his teams just didn't score that well.
Yeah. Yeah. I go back and forth on Dantley, because on the one hand, if you win two scoring titles in Utah, it's like a tree falling in the forest, right? Did anyone hear it? But on the other hand, he wasn't a great player. I think that was, by the time he got to Detroit, I think that was more clear. I know he was on the downside by the time he got there, but he couldn't replicate the numbers he did in Utah when he was on a team with other good players that also needed to be involved. And I think that's what really showed itself. And, he was there for the 2 years, and, obviously 87 was maybe a little unfortunate, because him and Vinnie Johnson die for a loose ball in game 7, bonk each other in the head, and then they're both out for the game and the Celtics win. Then 89, the year the Pistons won it, they traded him in the middle of the year for Mark Aguirre, who was kind of the same player, but maybe not as needy with the ball. Yeah. And they end up winning the title.
I think Aguirre was like a little bit better a shooter than him. And he also happened to be friends with Isaiah Thomas.
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone thinks that's the real reason it happened, but I do think Aguirre, because of his shooting and the fact that he didn't hang on to the ball quite as long as Dantley did, made him a little bit better fit.
Yeah. And also, they just were able to play Rodman more too. I mean, by the 88 finals, Rodman is actually closing a lot of those games in the 88 finals instead of...
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Okay. Who is, let's take a quick break and then we'll get to your next selection here. So if you're anything like me, I'm kind of starting to pack on a few pounds here due to quarantine eating. So I'm going to need to cut back a little bit. And one way that I found that works pretty well to do that is to just eat more protein when you're hungry. It just fills you up faster, takes longer to digest, doesn't have as many calories. And Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, but it's low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Their peanut butter brownie bar, 20 grams of protein, only 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. They've got 8 chocolate and nut flavors, 8 chocolate and nut free flavors. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they don't have that consistency of concrete that they might have had with other protein bars that you might have tried. So give these guys a shot, especially if you're one of these people who just, you try these protein bars and like, oh man, that doesn't taste good at all. Built Bar is the antidote to that. The way to get started with them, go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On, the name of this network. You'll get $10 off your first order. Use that promo code Locked On for $10 off at builtbar.com. All right, fire away. Next selection.
Okay, my next selection, I wrote down every player in NBA history named Isaiah Thomas.
I actually think that's not fair to the second Isaiah Thomas, because offensively, I thought that he only really had one season that was this good, but his 16-17 was like an unbelievable offensive season. Like, if you look at the rest of the talent on that team, that was like a top five offense.
Yeah. And it was all him. No question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, playing for Brad Stevens helped a lot, certainly. But I think people are just, because he then had the injury and he never did anything after that year.
Mm-hmm.
But people are probably going to just forget about how good he was that year. And yeah, he had a lot of defensive limitations and all that too. Like, I get that. But yeah, he probably certainly, at this point, he's right out of the league. So that's pretty rough.
Yeah. But
yeah, so I think you wanted to go more with the first Isaiah Thomas.
The real one I wanted to talk about was Isaiah Thomas. So, obviously everyone's watching the Jordan documentary, and the thing that amazes me, is that everyone talks about him not making the 92 Dream Team, which I sort of get because the way that team was selected was basically they went by the, you know, they had a committee and stuff, but basically it was who's more famous than whom. And that's who they picked, right? So I could understand a little bit being miffed that Isaiah got left off, but his last all NBA season was in 1987. Like his prime was in the mid 80s, and people get confused with that because the Pistons' best years were obviously the two championship years, which came much later. But by that point, there was a Piston guard who made all NBA in 1989 and 1990, but it wasn't Isaiah. It was Joe Dumars. And like Dumars doesn't get mentioned at all in this documentary, but by the time they were winning, he was the best player on the team. And he was the guy who had more of a case to be on that team than Isaiah did. I don't think either of them had a case to be on the team ahead of the players who were actually selected, mind you. But I just think that gets completely backwards, that this idea that they needed representation on the 92 team because they won in 89 and 90. And of course it had to be Isaiah. It's just an odd storyline. They actually kept one spot on that team open too for another NBA player. And then Drexler was so good in the 91-92 season. He finished second in the MVP voting, I think, that it was beyond any doubt that they would take him at that point. So I think that whole little warp tail has kind of shifted. I don't know.
Here's where it has to start is just there is no statistical argument that he's like some sort of just like inner circle, you know, top 30 player of all time. Like they're just, you cannot make that argument statistically. There's just no way.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So you gotta find another reason other than that.
Yeah. 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 You know, he just wasn't, even for the era, he just wasn't an efficient offensive player. Just in terms of his score, he scored at a fairly high rate, but not very efficiently. Was a good passer, but maybe not, you know, certainly wasn't like in the class of a couple other guys who were playing at the time. And like defensively, he was pretty good. So I think, you know, you give him credit for that. That whole team was really good defensively. But again, like, was a small guard who wasn't a dominant offensive player. And I think his position, because he was a champion at Indiana when he came in the league and then was a really good player with the Pistons, and then they ended up winning a championship there, I think his position relative to the other players at the time gets built up a little bit, more than what it really was.
Yeah. And you might make the argument, oh man, like they went with all defensive players and that they had to rely on him to take all the shots. And so because they had him, that's how they're able to play all these defensive players, but he doesn't have that high usage. I mean, it's around 25 usage in most of his best years, maybe 26.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you didn't see as many guys with like usages in the 30s the way you do now. But the true shooting is not particularly there. I mean, I thought he was a good passer, but not an unbelievable passer.
Exactly.
All of the hallmarks where there's just this idea of, well, someone has to get credit, right, for this championship. And generally, I think that's a decent heuristic because the best players in the NBA usually end up winning championships. But his team was an outlier. His team basically invented modern NBA defense. That's why the biggest reason that they were so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Teams, championship teams from Detroit do not apply to your heuristic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this isn't because there's like some anti-Detroit bias. I'm giving more credit to Joe Dumars and Dennis Rodman and Bill Laimbeer. And not only that, but their incredible depth. I mean, they went basically, 10 deep on those teams with good players. And yeah, they're tough. They're great rebounding teams. They did a lot on the offensive glass. And so, I mean, they were solid offensive teams, but they really made their hay on the defensive end back then. And so, yeah, I mean, Isaiah was a good clutch player. He was the most prominent shot creator on that team, to be sure. But it's still...
Well, on the first championship team, you can make an argument for Vinnie Johnson.
Yeah, although Vinny's, you know, he's not in there at the end of games most of the time. Every once in a while. I mean, he had that shot that won them the
night. He won them the game against Portland. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Game five when they're already up 3-1. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's just, it's really hard other than just, oh man, like when the arguments in favor of him are he was on a championship team that beat the Bulls and the Celtics and the Lakers, and you had to see him play. Like, that's okay. So, like, that's one of those arguments where it's like, oh, well, there's no way to refute it. Oh, you just had to see him play.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I could say that about literally anybody and you wouldn't be able to refute it. And he was also an exciting player and he was prominent and, so very good player, clear Hall of Famer, but not anywhere close to an inner circle guy in my mind.
I would agree with that. The one thing I would say in his favor, he would be better in today's game with his ability to handle the ball and his quickness. Like it definitely, the today's playing style would favor him more than that era.
And he would have taken more threes too. He had a pretty jump shot. I think the next group that I will kind of lump together here.
Okay.
Are just flashy ball handling guards. So, and we don't need to talk about these guys too much, but say like Earl Monroe would be.
Okay. I definitely had him on my list. Yes.
Pete Maravich would be in that category.
Yes.
Not that anyone's talking about this guy's a Hall of Famer, but like Jason Williams with the Kings and later the Grizzlies for a little bit. Like those kinds of players in particular were like, oh man, this guy is just putting together the highlight package. It's awesome. But if you really look at what they were doing, you know, they don't have the type of resume of most Hall of Fame type. I mean, again, Jason Williams is a little bit different category here, but just those guys like, yeah, these guys are awesome to watch. And that's why they have a ton of prominence, and they can have prominence for that reason.
Yeah.
But then I also think that people kind of conflate how awesome they were to watch and even, you know, their stylistic impact on other players. That could be huge too. But if you're talking about how much this person actually helped you win basketball game.
Yeah.
That's where it's lacking.
Would you put Rajon Rondo in that category?
Well, I don't know if it's like the flashy ball handling necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Although I definitely think he's a very, very overrated player, even back when he was good. And then the halo effect of him having been good lasted for like 5 years after that.
So, still going.
Yeah, I don't think people are like, oh man, Rondo is just this ball handling wizard. He's got like that behind the back fake, which is pretty sexy. But so I think that's just like a general category. But those three players really came to mind for me.
Sure.
So no arguments there. Who's your next selection here?
Okay, so I will go with what I would argue is the worst player in the NBA or in the Basketball Hall of Fame domestic division. So the worst American player in the Hall of Fame. So checks a lot of boxes here. Played for the Knicks, white, and led his college team to a Final Four. Hate to say this because he represented my home state of New Jersey as a senator for many years, but Bill Bradley.
Yeah, I mean, what did was he like? He was the fifth best player on the Knicks. That might be charitable. Actually, those Knicks teams.
Yeah, he made one All Star team in '73, where he was. I mean, he was okay, I guess. Like, I mean, he was a starter. And a championship team.
Give me the stats from his best season.
15.8 points, 4.4 assists, 45.9 shooting, 87.1 free throw. He was a good shooter. He could pass, you know, played the wing, you know, it was a good like ensemble cast type of team. You know, and he fit in there and everything, but he just like wasn't a great player. Like doesn't really have any business being in the Hall of Fame, right? Like he had a nice 10-year career. He was a starter for most of it.
Yeah. I mean, he was pretty good into the Final Four. I mean, if you throw in his college, also critically missed two seasons. The reference in Basketball References
did not play Rhodes Scholar. Yeah. Can you imagine that now? Like somebody who's just like, well, you know what? That sounds great, but you know, I really want to do is go to Oxford and read Tolstoy for the next 2 years, and then maybe I'll get back to you guys about playing in the NBA. Like that's just so unthinkable.
Yeah, are you allowed to defer those? That's the question. Yeah, so I mean, this is just one of these. I mean, to be a one-time All-Star, yeah, that's a very easy one. And you're right, he does check all the boxes there. So this person is not a player,
okay,
but is in the Hall of Fame. Can you explain to me what Jerry Reinsdorf did to deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, other than just be the owner for a team that won six championships. Like what did he do exactly?
Was there like a contribution to the game, or, you know, an innovation or some kind of impact or something?
Yeah, I mean, he hired Jerry Krause, and Jerry Krause did a nice job with the talent scouting after that. Although the process of how he hired Krause.
Is that amazing? Oh, he scouted me the White Sox and just asked to be the GM. And so I did it. Like what? I'm sorry. Like, I almost fell out of my chair in that scene.
Yeah, basketball is not the big business back then that it is today.
Yeah. Well,
and then, but I mean, the more hilarious thing is, it worked out.
It worked out. He was actually good at it. Like, what are the odds, right?
Oh, man. I mean, if you guys haven't read the Jordan Rules yet, that anecdote is actually not in the Jordan Rules, I don't think, specifically. But just some of the, like, cloak and dagger stuff that Krause was into is just, like, hilarious from that. Okay, let me give you a real one.
Okay, sure.
This is one that you and I may disagree on.
Okay.
Mitch Richmond. Very overrated player to me. I base it on a couple of things, but the biggest thing is, you know, never played on even, you know, I think, what did they make the playoffs, like 2 years when he was on the Kings that entire time? And, you know, those were like seventh seed, eighth seeds. And he's a six-time All-Star. Was part of one of the dumbest trades in NBA history, but
Yeah.
32 years old guard gets traded for Chris Webber around the time of the lockout. Not the Washington Wizards best work there. I can't remember if they were the Wizards Bullets.
They were the Bullets then, and that was one of the most lopsided trades in NBA history. They were quote unquote trying to fix their chemistry. So the little dangerous when that's the way you try to fix things.
Yeah. So Richmond did have pretty good shooting numbers from three, and you know, got up as high as six a game, but that was also during the time when the line was a little bit shorter. It never was as many as five a game outside of those 3 years when the line was shorter. But just the offenses on those Kings teams are just very, very mediocre. I mean, you're looking at offenses, you know, on average, you probably like low teens, high 20s. And yeah, there's not anybody else on these teams really, but you would think if this guy is really that good, making all these all-star teams, you know, kind of a thought of as a no-brainer Hall of Famer, that they probably would have been better on offense. But if you, I mean, you remember seeing more of his career than I do. I mean, I never really, you know, watching him, I never was thinking like, oh man, like this guy is just like totally unstoppable here. Like, how do you deal with Mitch Richmond? You know, I never remember having that thought watching him, but am I convincing you at all, or do you have a rebuttal here?
The shooting guard position in the Jordan era was actually very weak other than Jordan.
Yeah.
And it was,
yeah, I mean, well, Drexler was really good. You're talking about like Drexler, Reggie Miller. I think both those guys are clearly better than Mitch Richmond to me.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I'll rebut this with two arguments. One, he was actually part of some good offenses with the Run TMC Warriors. Now he was arguably the number three guy on those teams, but it really was just three guys. I mean, you go through those teams, like they had those three guys. They had Marshall Onis off the bench. They had nothing else. They're like, their bigs were like, might as well have been on another planet. And then,
yeah, or on the bench, actually, more often they would just not even play them.
Yeah, exactly. Second of all, like, you go through those Sacramento teams he was on, like, who is the second best player? Like, who is, you know, there wasn't a lot for him to like lift up. I mean, it was Wayman Tisdale and Lionel Simmons. It was, you know, was he with a league average starter at any point in that tenure?
That's a reasonable point.
I sort of get what you're saying.
Tell us what his game was like watching him. I mean, you kind of just like take some outside shots, right?
He was a good shooter. He was strong. Like he didn't get to the rim a ton. Yeah. It was odd. Like he was this, I don't know. It was a different game then. Like he was a really physical guard who shot jump shots mostly, and it worked, but yeah, it's tough to get crazy high percentages playing that way. I struggle with this a little. Like, I mean, you had to work so hard to find any footage of Mitch Richmond doing anything in the 90s. Because yeah. the Kings, like, you know, you would have had easier time getting, I don't know, Fresno State highlights than Kings highlights in the 90s. And so I think he was kind of forgotten because of that. But I also think, to your point, it may have hid some of the weaknesses in his game because people just didn't see him that much. And so
yeah, I mean, I think it was
like,
mean,
oh, how can you, you know, like, yeah, I mean, he was like making, overrated for being underrated almost.
He makes six straight all-star teams on teams that just weren't that good. I mean, it seems like it was like, all right, well, he's got these stats. Let's throw him in there.
Yeah.
On some of these. And, you know, again, maybe the guard position at the Western Conference wasn't that amazing at that time. He also didn't really do much other than score. I think that's another thing that you could look at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, PR over 20 only twice in his career.
Yeah, but that's a bullshit stat. I mean, who uses that?
Yeah.
Took Kansas State to the Final Eight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't think I'm not like, oh man, he was terrible or something like that. But I think,
but he was,
you know, to me,
well, yeah,
some
I get
people
it.
Might think that he was like better than Reggie Miller or something. I think that's pretty clear that he wasn't,
yeah.
Or like as good as Clyde Drexler, like that, again, not even close to that level of player. Okay, your turn. Well, here, actually, let's take a quick break first and then we'll get to that. Okay, John, your next overrated player that you wanted to submit.
Yeah, the worst player in the Basketball Hall of Fame from the post-merger era. Technically, like, he's white and he played for the Celtics, but I don't think that's why he got in. I have no idea how he got in, actually, or what he's doing there. Dino Raja.
Yeah, I was thinking of this the other day of, like, how is he in, but Tony Kukoc wouldn't be in?
Right, right. There's like, no logic to it at all. He played four seasons in the NBA. He could score and rebound a little, but was absolutely the walking definition of toast at the defensive end, and that's why he didn't stay. I just have no idea how or why this guy ended up in the Hall of Fame.
Everybody thought that Kukoc was better than him that whole time. Kukoc is coming off, like, you know, one of the most decorated careers in Europe when he finally gets to the NBA.
Yeah.
And then Kukoc is, like, on championship team.
Yeah.
Really just don't. If you're like, oh, we got to take a Croatian for that time. I agree. That's almost like too low hanging fruit. You might need to give us another one.
That's fish in a barrel, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Raja had some like unbelievably decorated career internationally either, right?
He was
third best player on those Croatian teams.
Yeah. On a team that won the silver medal. Yeah. 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 All right. I think we got to talk about Allen Iverson at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one where he's a floor raiser, to be sure, but unclear how well he could have played with others and shot some really low percentages. Like, granted, on some teams that had no other offensive talent, like the strategy was, we'll let Allen Iverson give us a somewhat competent offense, just shooting every time, and then we'll have everyone else just play great defense, and that'll be the elite side of the ball.
That was the scheme that the Sixers basically employed. Yeah.
Yeah. Also someone who I wish we had mentioned on the would have been better now group, like playing spread pick and roll. I mean, he starts off as a point guard, and then Larry Brown, it's still called the Iverson cut, the way that they used to get in the ball, where he would come across the floor and basically pop out to the wing from the free throw line area off a screen, catch the ball. And if his man was just slightly behind him, then he would rip it through and be able to just attack really quickly from the wing. But now these days he would just be, you know, high pick and roll every time and blowing by guys.
Also,
you know, very spectacular player, which can lead to being overrated a little bit. Winning the 2001 MVP over Shaq was one of the worst decisions in the history of the award.
Played in the Eastern Conference at a time when the Eastern Conference was total trash, which is part of how, you know, the legend got built up a little bit that season.
He makes the finals, they win 55 games, and, you know, that was the best team that he ever played on.
Yeah, arguably. I mean, the that last Denver team he was on was actually pretty good, but they were in the West, so they just got, you know, they weren't going to beat San Antonio. So,
I mean, it was interesting, you know, if you saw that his career probably actually got a little bit more of a boost those last couple of Denver years because they brought the hand checking in and he actually had some of his most efficient seasons, maybe his most efficient seasons in Denver.
Offensively, I thought he was actually better in Denver than he was in Philadelphia. You could at least make the argument. Yeah. Cause he was so much more efficient there. But then obviously once he, at his size, once he lost a step, then it kind of went south.
One thing I think actually maybe doesn't get enough credit for historically is he's averaging basically 42 minutes a game in his prime.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty insane. He had 2 years where he misses like 20 games. He never plays the full season.
Yeah. He missed some time, but played 82 games, 3,485 minutes in 02-03.
Yeah. Yeah. He, 01-02, he averaged 43.7 minutes a game.
Yeah.
And took 28 field goal attempts per game, shooting 39% from the field. Jerry Stackhouse also had like a crazy season like that around them.
Yeah.
And 500 true shooting again. True shooting. You know, so he's probably 2 points below the league average or so there in terms of true shooting. And he didn't shoot the three very well. I think his distribution could have been better, in a more modern era with more spacing.
Yeah, it could have been. But he wasn't a good passer. I mean, in any construct.
Yeah. Yeah. But these days, like anybody who's running high pick and roll with normal spacing today who can get to the basket, like they're taught to just set guys up and make those basic reads. Like if you're able to get to the basket well enough out of high pick and roll these days, like that's just like something you're taught from a young age in a way that you're just not.
Yeah.
You weren't back then. Like most players who can attack the basket that well out of pick and roll can be pretty effective setting guys up. But no, I mean, I agree with you. You know, I think he was probably considered.
I think he was definitely considered a top five player in the league at a time when there was no way in hell he was a top five player in the league.
Yeah. I mean, if you're set, like you've got like Shaq, Tim Duncan,
KG,
Garnett around at that time. Kobe is way better than him. I mean, there's a lot of players who, you know, he was probably considered on par of at times. And yeah, I will agree with you there. I mean, it's probably, you know, he's probably considered an inner circle Hall of Famer. And then you think of just how different would the conception of his career be if he doesn't make the final. That 1 year.
I mean, just if Philadelphia was in the West at that time.
Yeah.
You know? And that, I mean, there's no way he wins the MVP for getting them to a five seed, right?
Yes. That's probably true. Okay, my next one here, Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah. Yeah.
We talked some about him on the greatest seasons ever, so I won't go into that too much. But basically the idea was he's probably actually underrated as a defensive player, but way overrated as an offensive player. Kind of the same thing as with Dantley, where when he scores, he was very efficient, but he wasn't able to set up teammates. Or then later in his career, he was just standing there at the high post, setting guys up who are cutting around him, but not really forcing the action, drawing help, and then setting up his teammates. So the evidence is limited as to, you know, how much he really helped drive great offenses. And I think, you know, you can talk about him as a top 15 player of all time, but I wouldn't really be considering him in the top five.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that's the more, you know, for some of the stuff we've done, the more I went back and looked at Wilt's career, the more I agree with you on that. Because, I mean, the numbers are mind-boggling at first. We're like, what do you mean? He averaged 50 points a game. That's incredible. But he played, when you have to let so much air out of the numbers from NBA guys in the early 60s, when you account for how ridiculously fast the pace was and the fact that they basically never came out of the game, or in Wilt's case, literally never came out of the game. And so once you do that, it gets a lot less impressive. And then I just think at the end of the day, Russell was clearly more impactful, especially when it mattered. And Wilt's teams, even outside of Russell, kind of, they weren't as good as you might have thought they would have been if he was really like a top five all-time player. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't necessarily scale all that well as a player in addition to that. I think you just have to look at what the team impact was. The other thing, too, was that he would get really focused on these statistical benchmarks. Like, all right, I'm going to lead the league in assists, but then, okay, that means he's not going to shoot at all. Or he's trying to set the field goal percentage mark 1 year so he doesn't shoot in a bunch of games to preserve that. Or he was so proud of not fouling out of games, you know, he got to that 48.5 minutes a game famously in 62.
Yeah,
he's so proud of not fouling out of games that
he stops playing defense when he gets stops five.
Playing defense. Yeah. Or he's just like, no, I'm going to play the whole game just to play the whole game, even though it's a blowout. That's hurting the team, obviously, is his performance for the next game. So yeah, all that stuff, I think, really, guess what? When he was trying to go for statistics and manipulate the statistics, you probably can't rely on those statistics statistics as being indicative of how much his team was actually helping him win.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of like Hassan Whiteside trying to boost his 2K rating, like going on with him. Yeah. Like he totally would be doing that if he was playing today.
All right, who's your next one?
All right, so here's what I wrote down. Every Laker since 1980 except Magic, Kareem, Shaq, LeBron, and Sam Perkins.
Smush Parker, massively overrated.
Smush Parker.
Well, no. Well, actually, I mean, I think maybe Smush Parker has now become underrated because he gets crapped on. It's like Kobe was doing it with Smush Parker.
Yeah, exactly. So the players that I particularly wrote down were Jamal Wilkes, James Worthy, Kobe Bryant, Derek Fisher, Robert Horry, Kurt Rambis, Alex Caruso, and Lamar Odom.
I might quibble with a few of those. I think Lamar Odom actually might be about properly rated. I think Horry, like his game, just like the fact that he spaced the floor and was like versatile defensively. Yeah, he didn't put up great stats, but I think it was that's something that wasn't really appreciated that much about him. I mean, he made all those big shots. And so he's probably, yeah. That was like an unfair boost to how good he was. And he was on all these championship teams, but he also like played well with great players the way his game worked. And yeah, I mean, he had some times in Phoenix where, you know, he like, you know, throws the towel at his coach Danny Ainge at one point, and like he's might have had some attitude issues, but I thought he was like a very good quality forward for a long time who could play well with star players like that. I don't think anyone's had
people advance Hall of Fame arguments about Robert Horry. Okay.
Right, that's insane. But people is, you know,
people who should otherwise know better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I actually think like if he, and I think he, when you look at the way he played with Olajuwon, they get Drexler, they really go all in on the four out strategy, which was new at the time. Like he enabled them to play that way. Like I think he was a really, really good player. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you that some aspects of him are overrated, but maybe other aspects are underrated.
Okay.
Who else? Yeah. Wilkes, I looked at him. But as I looked into it more, it looked like he had like a really good defensive reputation. And I don't know enough to say whether that was deserved or not, but he made like some all defense teams.
Yeah.
But like his offensive reputation, yeah, I think that was like a little bit overrated probably.
You ever see him shoot?
Oh yeah, just crazy weird form.
Yeah. This jacked up behind the head thing that somehow he's able to make it work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that like teams really practiced like closeouts quite as much back then as they do now. I mean, it took him like 10 hours to get that thing off.
Well, you weren't going to block it though. I mean, he was shooting it from the center of his spine. So I don't know how you would get to it.
AC Green, I totally agree with you on that one. Is just, yeah, he played a bunch of games in a row. He's had some other reasons for being famous. was on those, like, well, he actually started an All-Star game when the Lakers fans ballot stuff, like literally ballot stuff, back when you could only vote in arenas on paper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fun times.
Must have bought a lot of like Bud Light or whoever like the sponsor was at that time. Who else did you say?
I had Derek Fisher and Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, Fisher, I totally agree with you. I mean, he's just a ton of right place, right time, hit some big shots. I think there was a time when he was pretty decent, but also just absolutely zero ball handling ability and ended up just killing some of like those OKC teams like late in his career, example. Like he hit even as late as like 2009, like he wasn't really any good, but he still hit like a couple of shots. I remember just being like at that time, like, oh man, people are gonna still think he's good now after he made like these
The Utah series against Golden State, right? Yeah. When he was with the Jazz that year. Yeah.
Well, and then in 2009, he hits big shots in game four, which that was actually a closer series than many remember. That 2009, like Courtney Lee misses a shot, like a tip at the buzzer. I think it was in game two that could have won.
Game two, he missed the alley-oop at the buzzer. Game four goes to overtime. Orlando botches the don't foul and Fisher hits the three to tie the game. Yeah. But like,
but no, I agree with you. Kobe, I mean, what do you think the common conception of him is?
This is a difficult one. First of all, has the statute of limitations passed? Like, can we talk about this?
I think it's possible to discuss it in a respectful way. I would rank him in the 10 to 15 range.
Yeah. Like I'd be comfortable with that. I think there's, So I think there's a subset of NBA world that is probably comfortable with that. And then another subset that will be out there with pitchforks if you have him anything outside the top five and like want to compare him with Michael Jordan, which is insane. And I think that's where it gets a little crazy. I mean, certainly just in terms of his fame, like he's probably the second most famous basketball player. He certainly wasn't the second best basketball player, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it depends too when you're talking about like, I think most people consider LeBron to be more famous than, but I don't know. I mean, obviously you could certainly argue that Kobe has a more emotional connection to more people.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. And again, that's one of the things how we talk about, like people gravitate to guards that way and to styles.
Yeah. And I do think that he probably is the best difficult shot maker in NBA history. And I think that's a big reason why players also gravitated to him as well. But if you compare him to Jordan, I think like Jordan, one of the biggest differences that I had is that Jordan could make those difficult shots almost as well as Kobe, but he got better shots much more easily than Kobe did and could get open more easily, even when you're talking about late in his career. But no, I mean, I think like 10 to 15 all time, like I think that most people would have Kobe in that range personally. Okay. Like I don't think it's, and then like there are some people who are just like, you know, they're Kobe stands and that's the way they feel, but I think that's a minority people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for those who would have him top five, I mean, I think there's an argument for like the lower end of the top 10. But no, I mean, I'd say like Tim Duncan to me, KG, I thought those guys are better than him.
Yeah.
Kobe's also a little overrated defensively.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Especially towards the end when he's making he made like 12 straight all defense teams or something
Which was complete. Yeah. That was completely absurd.
Yeah. Okay. My next one here, Jason Kidd.
Oh, really?
Great longevity.
Uh-huh.
Great defensively.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I remember even in the early days when you wrote about how Kidd was getting like MVP consideration. Even Shaq was like, oh yeah, he was the real MVP. He should have been the MVP in 02. Instead of Tim Duncan. I mean, anyone who was saying that was just ridiculous. That was all part of the narrative, right? He gets traded from Phoenix for Marbury. They actually don't really get any better on offense. They get way better on defense. And he was fantastic defense. I mean, even in the, as late as the 2011 finals, his defense is huge in that series, and he was good pushing the fast break. Later in his career, he got to be an acceptable spot up 3-point shooter. He took a ton of them. If you look at the offenses on his teams, though, I mean, they're just not that good. And you think about it, it's like, all right, what is he doing in the half court that's awesome? He's not shooting a good percentage. He wasn't really like, he didn't have much of a mid-range game. He could post up a little bit. Like there are times, like I remember in the series that they played, the first round, 2002, an all-time classic game that's forgotten now, game five, they almost lose in the first round to the eighth-seeded Pacers.
Oh, yeah. An amazing game. Yeah.
Reggie Miller hits a three-pointer off the backboard from about 40 feet on like a turnaround three that was clearly late.
Probably after the buzzer. Yes.
Yeah. But they're just like going to Kidd, trying to just like post up to get late game offense. And it's just like an absolute struggle. Like he's trying to shoot like turnaround jumpers. Like he just didn't really have that in his game.
Yeah. Was not a particularly good half court offensive player. Yeah.
And so people remember, oh man, he's like, oh, he should have won MVP in 02. And yeah, that Nets team wins 49 games and they do it on the strength of their defense. They're just the one seed. They barely make it out of the first round and, you know, they get completely waxed after they get to you mentioned that they beat the team that you considered the worst conference finals team in like the last like 25 years. I can't remember exactly what you said.
The Antoine Walker led Celtics. Paul Pierce. I know.
But, and they shot a lot of threes, which was ahead of their time under Jim O'Brien. But yeah, so I don't know that he was really like that positive of an offensive player, especially out of transition. It's actually in some ways kind of similar to like a Ben Simmons today.
Mm-hmm.
I would say somewhat similar games there. I mean, Simmons, obviously a better finisher, Kidd, a better shooter, but yeah, he was a reluctant shooter until like the last third or so of his career. I mean, he's playing on a team with Vince Carter and Richard Jefferson, and they're kind of, you know, we're winning high 40s, maybe low 50s. And so, I mean, if you're really talking about him as, again, you know, I think he was a guy who was a lot of times a top 15 player in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. He was, he was good in Phoenix. He got to New Jersey, was 28. The weird thing, the year after he almost won the MVP was by far his best season. And he got the Nets back to the finals that year. They basically had a worse team, right? Because Todd McCullough had to retire for the foot problems. They trade for Dikembe Mutombo, who is pretty close to the finish line by then. So the supporting cast is not as good. Kidd plays way better. I don't know if they ended up winning more games, but their point differential was like way better. They were much more difficult to deal with in the playoffs. I want to say, did they sweep Detroit that year?
What was the year that Chauncey Billups hits like the half court shot in game five? Is that 2003 or 2004?
I think that was a year later. I think that was 04.
Yeah.
It was so bizarre because he didn't get like a peep in the MVP voting that year, and he was way better. Yeah, the Nets were number one in defense that year, 56 expected wins. I thought that was Kidd's masterpiece by far. But again, like, he was in the playing in the JV division. They actually swept both the second round and the conference finals against Boston and Detroit. And Detroit wasn't Detroit yet.
Yeah. So it was 04 when they actually gave that Detroit team their best run of that playoff run. Although the 04 Pacers were also a great team, and Jermaine O'Neal was kind of broken down by the end. And
Jamal Tinsley. Yeah.
Yeah. God, it's all those horrible days of basketball.
The memories of these great Eastern Conference playoff series of yore. Yes.
that finals between the Pacers and the Pistons in 2004 with the Tayshaun Prince block on Reggie Miller, I think it was the end of game two. But that was basically got to be like the lowest scoring playoff series since the merger, right? If not, certainly the lowest scoring high profile series.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe Pistons Spurs in 05 being the only one that's close.
Oh, I think, yeah, I mean, that one was low scoring, but I think even that was like a 7 seconds or less affair compared to the Pistons and Pacers. I mean, I just remember every game being 73-67.
Okay, how many more do you have here? I know we're running a little short on time now.
I probably got most of my biggest ones out. I got a couple other guys.
Let's do like a quick lightning round.
Sure. DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, okay. We've talked about him enough. I think we know. I think people know it at this point.
Yeah,
another one of those East ones as well. Joe Johnson has got to be on there for sure. Seven-time All-Star Joe Johnson.
He made seven All-Star teams. Okay. But like, nobody knew who he was. Like, if you had asked anyone to name the top 20 players in the league, nobody was going to say Joe Johnson.
That's true. And yet he probably wouldn't have been in the top 30 players in the league, but he still made seven All-Star teams. I mean, like he's going to come up for the Hall of Fame. And I mean, basically anyone who's made seven All-Star team be in. And I don't believe he deserves to be in. So that's where I'm saying he's overrated.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of those ones where
his Hall of Fame debate is going to be
like, oh man, we are watching a Hall of Famer right now. Joe Johnson. Nobody would have said that at the time, but yet you might have people who go back on like whatever the Hall of Fame's version of the Veterans Committee is and be like, oh, seven-time All-Star Joe Johnson. Yeah, throw him in.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I mean, I probably saw more of Joe Johnson's career than any significant media person, so I should probably weigh in on this more. Because I mean, those are some bad teams, but he was a floor raiser, right? I mean, that's what he was at the end of the day.
Those teams like made a bunch of playoffs towards the end of his time in Atlanta, but
yeah, they actually, and in the play, he was able to, like, his game was able to carry over to the playoffs because it was so, like, in the playoffs, a lot of times things just break down to iso ball anyway, so it almost wasn't any different for him, but it was just very hard to play really efficient basketball that way. He would have individual games where he did it. I mean, he had a game in the Chicago series, the year they won 60 whatever games with Derrick Rose. That was they beat Chicago on the road and Johnson was brilliant. He was really good that first year they made the playoffs where they took the champion Celtics to seven games in the first round.
Yeah, maybe the most lopsided seven game series.
All four Boston wins were like by 40 points and the Hawks wins were like by 2-1-4 or something. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I got another one for you.
Okay.
Bernard King.
Yeah. Bernard King.
So kind of the same deal as Adrian Dantley. I mean, a little bit different, but so here's some of his stats. His best year is probably 84, 85 or 83, 84. That's when he has the famous Christmas Day game.
Yeah.
13th on offense, but number one on defense this year. And that's actually, I think he also had that big series against the Pistons in the playoffs that they had like that crazy game five where mm-hmm. Isaiah scores like 10 points in the last 2 minutes to,
yep.
to get him into overtime. But I think they end up, the Knicks end up winning. And they actually did take the Celtics to seven games, the eventual champion Celtics to seven games, but they actually had the number one defense that year. They're 13th on offense, relying on him a ton. But you just look at some of these stats, 26 points a game, 57% from the field, but 2.1 assists per game. And that's like, he's just not creating at all for his, and that's, you know, that's what forwards back then yeah. were asked to do.
Yeah.
And
it was a lot like Dantley. Yeah. Like a one-on-one technician. Yeah. Probably didn't shoot as much from the perimeter as Dantley, operated more around the basket, had a way of shooting on the way down that was really hard for defenders to time and block. Yeah. Even though he wasn't huge, wasn't an amazing athlete. First guy to come back from a torn ACL and make the All-Star team, although it was a pretty dubious All-Star selection.
He put up like 28 points a game on the 90-91 Bullets, and you know, that was
kind of it for his career. Yeah.
That point. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so, and his game, I'm not, I would say Dantley, he was a much better player to me than Dantley when he was good. He also really only had like a 3 year peak. He had one real good year in Golden State and then three in New York. And then that was about it. But, and his game, he wasn't like holding the ball quite as much. You know, he would sort of get a cross screen across the lane, catch it, take a dribble, and then like try to rise up over his defender.
It was a meeting halfway between Adrian Dantley and Anton Jameson was what he was.
Yeah. But he had these dominating scoring performances.
Now
but,
he was having the year when he tore his ACL with the Knicks.
Yeah.
He was having, you know, the career year, the thing that was, you know, making the leap, whatever you want to call it. So good that he made first team all NBA that year, despite only playing 55 games.
Yeah. So maybe you wouldn't be at the top of my list, but people talk about him as just being like this unbelievable player. And I would caution on that a little bit because the offenses that he played on, you know, he never played an elite offense, didn't play with elite talent either, but the overall offense is below average. I mean, it's the lack of playmaking, you know, lots of scoring, less playmaking, yeah. certainly a valuable player.
And, I think,
you
know, one of the things we've learned in the analytics era is that playmaking really impacts your team's overall offense a lot more than individual scoring was. And you maybe wouldn't think that would be the case.
Yeah.
But the numbers really bear that out.
Any more quick hitters from you before we pick our top three each?
So I had a couple of probably predictable guys, Steve Francis, Rajon Rondo. We haven't talked about Carmelo.
Yeah, that's another one where, I mean, clearly a Hall of Famer to me, and he kind of gets lumped together with LeBron and Wade because they're all drafted in that top five in 2003.
Yeah.
But I mean, to me, I would say, you know, Wade is clearly a much better player. I would even say Bosch was a better player than him when you throw in his defense and ability to stretch the floor.
I would agree with that. But Bosch, I mean, and he proved it, was more easily slotted in with other elite talent than Carmelo. I didn't really go big on Carmelo because I think in a way he's probably sort of properly rated. Like, I think he's really famous, but I think a lot of people know he's overrated in this era in a way that maybe didn't happen in previous eras.
Well, the other thing I would say too is I don't think he was really even being overrated at the time in any individual year. And he played on some really good offenses in Denver, that 12-13 team when it was just him and a bunch of shooters. That was like a top five offense in the NBA, that Knicks team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think most people were talking about him as kind of, you know, the 10, 15, 20 range in a given season in the league. You know, and he's not making that many all-NBA teams at the time. But I think that it's more people going back like, oh, man, this guy is just an all-time great. He's got all these scoring numbers. I actually think that some people now are overrating where he was 10 years ago, whereas the people 10 years ago maybe had it right.
Okay. Okay.
And that's just one segment, obviously. Yeah. There's the other segment, as you talked about. But, and I think there's even a, and I agree with you. I mean, overall, I had him on my list too, as just another guy who scores a lot, and that's his most salient skill. So he's more likely to be overrated.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I do think some people go so far as to be like, oh my God, like he was always this bad as he was at the end of his career when we could really drill on in on his defense with the analytics and like that. He wasn't always that terrible. Yeah. You know, so I think some people go a little bit too far in the other direction.
Yeah, I can see that. The other reason I always hold back a little on Carmelo is because he was so freaking good in international games.
Yeah. Okay, I got like two more for you here.
Okay, sure.
And one I want to discuss. Jerry Lucas.
I never saw him play, so I couldn't really go there. He was a very heralded college player. His NBA career was probably
Not worthy of you know being a like clear Hall of Famer in the end, but it's just based on his NBA career, Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
He was an early stretch big. He got a lot of rebounds and he scored a lot, but was just terrible defensively. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the numbers for some of the teams that he was on, those Cincinnati teams, and you know couldn't really play center, was pretty slow at forward. Didn't really do much other than just shoot 2-point jumpers when that wasn't really that great.
That's
one for me. Another one that I've got is DeAndre Jordan. I don't think he's going to make a Hall of Fame, but some of those all NBA nods that he had were a little speculative. Very overrated defensively.
Very overrated defensively. Might in his prime, I think he was underrated offensively, but yeah, definitely,
that's reasonable.
Definitely, he got to a point where he was ridiculously overrated defensively. Like, like it was almost absurd.
Anyone else you got? Let me go through my list.
Exhausted my list here.
Let me ask you a question about someone.
Okay.
Want to go there yet on this guy. Dave Cowan. Celtics.
Yeah.
White.
Yeah.
Center.
Yeah.
Which was like the glamour position at the time.
Yeah, it definitely was.
They had pretty deep teams. I mean, they make their 1973, they're a 68 win team. They lose, but probably would have lost to the Knicks anyway. The Havlicek injury happens when they're already down in the series in 73, even though they had won 68 during the season. 74 and 76, they win championships, and he's on it. His career kind of peters out pretty quickly. Watching some of the old games with him, you know, he was like a little bit more of a stretch big. The efficiency was very low. I mean, career true shooting under 50% as a center. And, you know, he kind of hustled. Like, their defenses were pretty good that he was on. But as I watched him, I wasn't like, you know, and he was, oh, he hustles. He's, became this darling in Boston because of that. But I was like, man, like, what is this guy doing exactly that's so awesome? Like, I just wasn't seeing it. And maybe it was just happened to be the games I watched. Like, I think he falls out of like the famous triple overtime game,
right,
against the Suns in 1976. So you don't get to see, you know, that's probably the most commonly seen game of those teams. But yeah, like what did he actually do out there on the floor other than just like, you had to see him play. He's like the heart and soul of the team, like that guy. I mean, those are like the first things you hear about him.
Yeah.
And I'm always skeptical when that's the first thing you hear about a guy.
I mean, that MVP in 73 is pretty dubious, right?
Havlicek is the best player on that team.
Yeah. And it was just, they gave it to, Boston had the best record. And so they wanted to give it to somebody on the Celtics. And for whatever reason, like, Cowens was probably like, you know, people get tired of voting for the same guys and stuff. It's always kind of the new guy. You know, Cowens was still like the new guy then. So I think that's what made him a more kind of sexy MVP candidate. He was an undersized five. So I think the narrative around him got built because of that.
Yeah. And he makes also worst era for the league. Probably they had just had expansion and a bunch of good players are in the ABA during that period.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. JoJo White was on that team too, who was probably also one of the more maybe iffier Hall of Fame guys.
Also, 766 career games.
Yeah, yeah. He retired and like, I don't know, it was weird. He was like driving a cab in Boston, I want to say. I'm trying to remember the story on this. It's a weird story. His flame went out though for a while.
So I don't know. I mean, there's not much in the statistical record to really support it. I mean, his 2-point field goal percentage is all anybody's taking back then, obviously, you know, career 2-point percentage, 46%. So I mean, he's taking some jumpers and stuff, but is that really that amazing? And he is a good good passer. He's averaging like 4 or 5 assists a game in some of these years. Gets only exceeded 20 points twice in his career. So, I mean, I think really the only argument that you would have is that he was just that good defensively. And I'm not,
I don't
they
think
have some good defenses. You imagine he's a part of that. So maybe that's where the value comes in that I'm just not able to capture.
Yeah, even that, I mean, you don't really see that in the record either.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm with you on this one. I had actually forgotten about him.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a thought like, oh man, he was like made all these all-star teams and they win 2 championships. They have a 68 win season. He wins MVP. There's a thought maybe that he's like one of the best players of the 1970s. If you just look at some of the accolades that he was getting, and I don't know that I could go that far based on what I know right now, but feel free to correct me. Those of y'all who saw more of him, but it's there are a few things about him that got my Spidey sense, my overrated Spidey sense. Okay, should we pick our top three here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, I'm going to start with Isaiah Thomas as the most overrated player in NBA history.
Okay. I think he has a pretty good case.
He'll be glad to hear that.
You're talking about Pistons and not Kings, Suns, Celtics, Wizards, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't forget Cavs and Lakers too, if you really want to.
How could I? Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, this.
Who are your other candidates?
It's weird how this Jordan doc has brought it. Has brought it back to light.
Yeah, but everyone, anyone, I mean, you know, there's always teams that have like stands in the media. And so the, oh my God, you had to have seen Isaiah play. You're insane. I think there's an element because he's always compared to Stockton Stockton, I think might actually be a little bit overrated myself. But there's Stockton is really by just the more traditional analytics is old enough. We can say that now, just, you know, looking at like some of the box score based metrics and his efficiency and stuff like that, whereas like Stockton is kind of like the analytics darling, and I think there's like an element that's fighting back against that, like the people who dismiss analytics, those are the people fighting the hardest for Isaiah and saying you have to see him play. And I was like, hey guys, maybe neither of them were that good actually, but I think if you really go back and look at it at the time, especially like that's the argument that I always make to those people is like, you know, yeah, okay, you start in the All-Star game every year, but who else is in the East that's even any good? And, you know, like you said, his last NBA team is like what, 86, 87 or all NBA team is 86, yeah. 87.
And just Stockton was making first team every single year at that time. And it wasn't because Utah was all over national TV. So the case is pretty strong. I think that certainly that Stockton was the better player at the time. Now, Stockton, I think, also gets a lot of bonus points for his insane longevity, which is a different argument, right? How much do you value longevity versus peak dominance? I think Isaiah is a good one. Would I rate him number one?
Who are your other candidates? Let's be.
I would say Allen Iverson, Bill Bradley. The Lakers as a collective whole, although I'm not sure I can come up with one individual Laker who is quite on this level. I think Earl Monroe's got a case to be in here too.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say about Monroe. And I think to really be the most overrated, you have to have people talking about you as, you know, potentially a top 5 player ever at your position. Is Monroe really even appearing in many of these debates anymore?
No. It's just when people get teary eyed talking about Knicks teams from the 70s. Yeah.
I'll give you my number two. My number two is Wilt.
Okay.
Very good player, but yeah, not if he is top 10, it's like very low in the top 10 to me. Whereas I think there are some who before Jordan might have even argued that he was the greatest of all time.
Yeah. That was becoming a more common argument. And I think actually the analytics era inadvertently kind of swung that argument that way when people started looking more at Wilt's numbers and less at the results of what was happening at the time. And now I think that we've gotten more video involved, more team level analytics. We understand that the perception at the time was probably more correct than we realized. In terms of the Russell Chamberlain debate, so to speak.
Maybe Bill Russell should have been on our underrated list.
You know, the more I think about it, it's weird because there was a long time where he was considered the greatest player ever, right? And then the pendulum swung way the other way, and now it's swinging back. So it's we're shooting at a moving target a little bit with him.
Yeah, but especially because I think just one player defensively could have so much more of an impact just at that point in the NBA.
Yeah,
really looking at his impact. And then number third, I'd probably go Adrian Dantley.
I don't really think anyone talks about him. I had Allen Iverson.
Yeah, as number one, or
I had him as I wasn't really thinking about Wilt when you brought him up, but he's got a pretty good case. I would put Iverson two or three. Isaiah's got a pretty good case at number one. I mean, Antoine Walker would be my other guy. He's sort of my stereotypical overrated guy. I just don't know if he's like a significant enough player for me to put him at number one.
Yeah, I would agree, and I also think that there are plenty of people who realize that he's not that good. I think he's become almost more of a joke at this point. Whereas, part of the reason I say it for Isaiah is I still hear people standing for him way more than just about anyone else. Like, I think Isaiah is the person that I feel I most often see myself disagreeing with people, and especially like some commentators that I relatively have a lot of respect for overall.
Yeah. I'd say on that point, you're accurate. So in his era, I think Antoine Walker was more overrated at the time he was at his peak, or Allen Iverson. But historically now, I think people get that with those guys, more than they get it with Isaiah Thomas, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Isaiah, so recap for me, Isaiah number one, Wilt Chamberlain number two, and then Dantley number three. I think he might be the most overrated player in terms of like his own individual statistics ever in history. And maybe the fact that he's not in the Hall of Fame, right? So, the fact that he isn't in there is,
Well, I still got to go. Then I got to take Bill Bradley, who is in there.
Well, you have to consider his contributions.
Do his legislative accomplishments count?
No, he had some unbelievable years in the Oxford Intramural Basketball League. He's a Rhodes Scholar. They may not have had that, actually. Maybe they just made it just for him. I don't think basketball is huge in the mid-60s in England.
Killer cricket bowler, though, I hear.
Actually, I think like netball. I've actually never seen netball. I remember I went to England.
Netball is wild. No, it's in Australia, New Zealand. Oh, if you ever go there, you got to watch netball. It's wild, man. It's like... It's crazy. You can like, cause you're not allowed to contest a shot once they start their shooting motion. It's crazy. It's like, what is happening? Like I couldn't turn it off cause I was just so amazed by what I was seeing.
Yeah. They don't have a backboard either, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just like sitting out there on a pole, like hanging in space.
I mean, I remember I was like so desperate to play basketball when I was in England as a 13-year-old, 1993. Uh-huh. And I saw it. I was like, what the hell is this thing? And like someone tried to explain the rules to me, but I didn't really understand at the time. I'm going to YouTube that after we go. Okay. So let's recap again. Your top three.
I think he convinced me on Isaiah. I'm going to go Isaiah, then Wilt, then Allen Iverson.
Yeah, Iverson is a good one. I may be saying that giving Dantley a little my assessment of how he is rated is probably, I could feel it, but that maybe I'm thinking that he's rated too highly to say that he is overrated. But, just looking at the stats, I think that's why I want him out there on principle because I think he establishes an important principle.
Okay.
Not just looking at like a player's individual stats. All right. We are done here. What'd you write about for the Athletic this week?
Oh, I got a good one coming. I got my top 23 players for the NBA draft coming in the early part of this week. So keep your eyes out for that.
Yeah, actually,
7,000 words. So hope you got some time.
So we're going to have to say this for next time, but I will tease it now. There are two things that you wrote about last week that I disagree with you on that I want to discuss next week. One of them is you had Christian Wood as the most improved player.
Okay.
And I think we're actually going to, we're going to do just a general awards disagreement next week. And then the other thing you said was that you thought, forgive me if I'm paraphrasing this wrong, I'm just doing this from memory, that Miles Turner made more sense for Indiana to trade than Domantas Sabonis if one of them has to go.
Oh man, you're just gonna go down this road again, aren't you?
Well, you and I have never really discussed.
You are the least popular podcaster in all of Lithuania. Do you realize that?
Lithuania and Indiana.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and we just, Isaiah Thomas, pride of Indiana University. we crapped on him all day today, too.
And a former Pacers coach.
Yeah, I don't think he was overrated as a Pacers coach, though.
Fair. That's,
I mean, how crazy is it that the Pacers went from Larry Bird to Isaiah Thomas as their coach?
Yeah.
That's a forgotten time.
Yeah.
And then Rick Carlisle became the Pacers coach, and they immediately got a lot better.
Funny how that happened.
And when they gave up Larry Bird and went to Isaiah Thomas, they immediately got a lot worse. Interesting the way that happened. All right. That's enough for today. This has been fun, and we'll talk to y'all next week. Till then.